Hey folks, welcome to the Hang Your Own Hang podcast, a monthly podcast about hammocks, hammock camping, and everything related. Our goal is to enlighten you if you're a ground dweller and to entertain you if you're already a tree dweller. I'm Jonathan Coupel, and this is my co-host, Mark Baldwin.
Hey Jonathan, how you doing?
Hey, good. Mark, how are you?
Great.
Getting ready for the winter?
Oh yeah, in this, 70 degrees yesterday in Buffalo?
What the heck? Buffalo's supposed to be cold. We're supposed to be snowed in.
I'm not complaining one bit.
I hear ya. So, Mark, you remember when I loaned you the book, The Ultimate Hang? How did you like that?
It was a great starting point for getting into mainly trying to bring all the ideas to hammock camping together. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different options and everything, and for a newbie, it can be really overwhelming. And with the illustrations and all, it was a great way to start.
That's great. Well, today we have actually Derek Hansen, the author of The Ultimate Hang, as our guest for today's interview. So I'm really excited to introduce him. Derek, hello.
Well, hello. This is Derek.
Just a quick bio. Derek's first experience with hammocks was as a youth and scouting. And then in March 2009... he'd supplied the basics diagram into the hammockforums.net environment. This is actually the diagram that I use when I do my hammock camping University of Scouting class. Saw that you were actually an active member by 2009, so I'm guessing that you'd done some hammock camping before that. I saw you have over 75 product reviews at backpackgeartest.org.
Yes, so even before I got involved with hammock camping, I'd also been doing some, if you're familiar with Backpack Gear Test, mm-hmm. they do a lot of product reviews, and it's been a fun experience. I just actually stopped doing that formally about a year ago to focus more on hammocks. So, but yeah, that's been a lot of fun. Worked all the way up to be an editor and kind of helped manage Backpack Gear Test on the back end as an administrator. So that was a lot of fun. Great people to work with.
Got it. Looks like you've also been very active as a scout adult in the local Boy Scout troops when you've been traveling around or in your different residences.
Absolutely.
It looks like you published The Ultimate Hang in 2011.
Yep.
And you continue to contribute content both via your own website, theultimatehang.com, and via other hammock camping sites. I've seen you on Reddit. I saw you did a neat Ask Me Anything there, and you're an active participant in both hammock forums and online at facebook.com and some of the other online communities.
Yeah, actually, it's a little scary to think how much my life is online now. Mm-hmm. but yeah, I get around. I've really enjoyed hammock camping all the way from, again, like you said, as a little Boy Scout, all the way to being an old grumpy scout as I am today.
That's great. Now, so you, your experience as hammocking as a boy, as a scout and all, and then what brought you back into it as an adult? I mean, is it just getting back into the leadership role in scouting, or was it before becoming a leader in scouts?
You know, it's kind of funny to me, actually, when I think about getting back into scouting, because as a youth, I just absolutely loved scouting. I went, all the way to Eagle Scout and became staff on a couple of scout camps, and I mean, that was probably the highlight of my youth, was doing those activities. And my family was also pretty heavily involved. And that's, again, how I got involved with hammocks, probably not really purposefully, I guess, but we were at a high adventure base, and we decided to build an Ewok village, which at the time sounded really awesome. But it's basically just these platforms that we built up in the trees, you know, lashed them all together, spent the day building them, and when they finally told us where we were going to sleep up in those, they gave everybody one of those tiny military mesh hammocks you're familiar with.
Oh, yeah.
Probably the most uncomfortable type of hammock.
Over 15 minutes, you can't feel that. You can feel the grid pattern etched into your butt.
Yeah, I think they're really designed to, like, hold stuffed animals and stuff. But we somehow squeezed our sleeping bags into those and fell asleep. At least I think I slept. But it was a lot of fun. I think what really made the difference was that it was electrifying. I mean, hammocks really made that experience, you know, it typified what the high adventure was all about, just having that great experience, and it made camping a lot of fun. And when I got back into scouting as an adult, I think I had forgotten a ton of stuff. I don't know about you getting into scouting, but, you know, I had a big break basically when I went to college and got my family started. But when I came back to scouting, I was asked to be a scoutmaster, and I just about, I don't know, I could have had a heart attack because I couldn't remember very many things except my knots. You know, I mastered knots and I love knots, but I had to go back to the store and I picked up everything that I remembered as a Boy Scout. That included, you know, a big Coleman 5-pound backpack, external frame, big old sleeping bags, tents. And with just those big three items, I think I was up to 25 pounds.
It's amazing how everything got so much lighter.
Well, yeah, I guess maybe. I'm sure everything got lighter, but I didn't think that way. I was just thinking about what I was used to, what I remembered. And I could barely fit everything in that pack, even though I keep that pack just as a demo now, probably like you in scouting. I bring out the different gear items and explain the pros and cons. And that one just collects dust in my garage. But after a few trips with that heavy gear, that's when I started going back to, you know, kind of going deeper into my mind about what are the things are there out there? And that's what brought me back to hammock camping. And yeah, I started hammock camping a lot earlier than 2009. I kind of floated on the forums for a while just to kind of learn a lot more about hammock camping and how it worked. You know, that where you got to see a lot of people experimenting with how to stay warm and how to stay dry and how to stay bug free.
Yeah, it was interesting. Basics. The oldest post I could find from you was asking people to try to identify a scat that you'd seen on the trail. It was so unlike you.
Well, you know, I don't know. Like when I think back on my online experience, I was a little timid, you know, going into this forum that had a lot of heavy hitters, a lot of people that I had, you know, learned a lot from already. And like, what can I say as, you know, what can I do to start introducing myself? As hammock forums developed and grew, they even kind of created those introduction forums. You could just say, hey, I'm new, I'm starting off, but I didn't know what to say. I didn't really. So yeah, scat. How about that?
I know how you feel. It's funny when we did our interview with Shug, it was almost like being in Wayne's World. You know, we are not worthy.
Yeah, Shug's great. And some of those guys, you know, it is intimidating because you see the wealth of information. But as I got into it, and I'm sure as others, including yourself, these are great people. And for the most part, are very willing to share and very open to the experience. And I learned a lot, but I also learned that there was a lot I could share, things, you know, tips and tricks that I had picked up along the way that became, you know, those aha moments for myself and other people. And that's what I think has been fun about that experience with hammock forums. And I think at one point, I'm trying to remember exactly when I drew that basics illustration. I think I first drew it for a review I did with Backpack Gear Test. Then I posted it also on hammock forums as well. So there are like multiple places that it was starting to get used. And I was just surprised at how well it was received and the kinds of accolades. People were like, oh, this is great. Actually, one of the first comments that I received was, I'm trying to remember if it was Professor Hammock or somebody else, because I had drawn the, you know, the 30-degree hang angle. I had drawn it upside down. At the time, I didn't really think about where they were measuring it from the horizontal. I had measured it on the flip side, like the reflective angle. It still works. It's just a different way of thinking of it. So anyway, I just remember that was my first like, oh crap, I did something wrong, but I updated that illustration. And, you know, I think for the most part, because it bridges that point where you are no longer just, a consumer of that information, but now can I really play on that stage where there's a lot of other people who have been doing hammocks, at least in the camping world, you know, for quite a few years and have a good amount of experience. So it was very intimidating at first to just say, hey, you know, here's a way to visualize what I think we're talking about and the great feedback we got.
Yeah, that's interesting you say that. I think that's kind of the niche that you found and brought to the table too, is this idea that you have this talent for a visual presentation of information. You simplify it. And it wasn't being filled, this niche wasn't being filled by really anybody else before you came on board. you know, the text-based forum, certainly you can describe in 1,000 words the 30-degree angle and the benefits from it. But that illustration, you know, it really is true. It's worth, that simple illustration is worth so much more. Do you think that illustrations are simply a better way to present the material when you're trying to teach somebody new to hammock camping?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think just for people generally speaking, and we're seeing this trending in research, and that is we're very visually oriented. To be able to see something, and that's why video, again, and it's photography are just taking off on social media for that same reason, because we respond to it. It takes the brain less time to process.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much of the brain that's devoted to visual representation, so it makes sense that kind of medium is well received. And I think for myself, I mean, there are a lot of great drawings and illustrations out there. Maybe I just lucked out to be one of the first, but it has been a great opportunity. And I know for myself, I love to see things. I love to see things broken out and in very clear ways. And that's one of my strengths and my background in graphic design and marketing and illustration is I love to break down those complex ideas and how can I simplify them. And I'll take an illustration, for example, or an idea and concept, and I'll sketch it out a couple of different ways. I've got 3 or 4 notebooks right beside me here that I keep track of all of my illustrations, and I'll have different iterations, you know, different vantage points maybe to look at a particular knot or a hammock, for example, and how can I make that look as clear as possible. One of the things, too, I found is, you know, simplicity. It kind of goes along my whole mantra with hammock camping as well. Keep it simple. And don't put so much detail, you know, take as much detail away as possible so that still the idea comes out as strong as possible.
Mm. Yeah, that the whole art of reduction.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the things I noticed, and you can tell me whether I'm right or wrong here, but your style is remarkably similar to Mike Cleland, another illustrator in the camping industry. Is that something that's intentional or just a kind of a coincidence?
No, that's a good, absolutely a great connection. I'm a fan of Mike Cleland's work, and I have several of his books. I love the way, in fact, that it really was an inspiration for me when I was looking at how can we put a book together, period, because I loved that style, right? It's a very clear, simple style, and he's got a knack for, like you said, that art of reduction. Some of his illustrations are a little more complex and detailed illustration style. And sometimes he just goes down to bare bones where there's just a concept illustrated, very simple line art. Certainly our styles of illustrations are different, but the approach is the same. So I did take a very similar approach when I looked at that, when I was looking at doing the book, you know, how can I make everything kind of have a similar feel?
Mm-hmm.
And also have a lot of fun with it. I think anyone that's looked at Mike Cleland's work would say that he's fun. He's a fun illustrator, and the way that material is put together, you can, and I think for me, the value would be if my kids or not just my kids, but anybody that picks up the book, if they could look at that and say, hey, that was a lot of fun. You know, I learned something, but there's a little bit of comic in there as well. There's a little bit of humor, not taking myself too seriously. I mean, I have done a lot of technical illustrations for hammock camping.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's still some of that, but there's also a little bit of the humor.
Yeah, and the use of human actors in your illustrations as well. You've got a common thread. I think there's a male and a female actor, and they come up repeatedly. So it's definitely more human. It's kind of neat to look at.
Yeah, it helps a lot too. Like one thing just in terms of photography or visual illustration is that we're more focused on ourselves, you might say. So when we see humans in a photograph or a video, we're much more compelled to look at it. It's much more interesting to look at. So wherever I can, I like to throw those in there. And mm-hmm. We'll see that a lot more in the second edition of my book as well.
Oh, that's a teaser. Careful.
You can edit that out.
Yeah, we'll leave it in. It does seem though, is that kind of an artifact of just the way that you approach the world in general? It seems like you're presenting things visually. You must be a visual learner. Is that how you interact with all of the other parts of your life?
Probably yes. I'm definitely a visual learner and very also tactile. You know, like I think I said before, one of the joys that I've had as I've gotten out to be a little bit more known with hammock camping is doing these demonstrations, going to these big group hangs and, showing people stuff. And so I love that. And I think that's another reason why I love scouting in that regard is being able to work with other people and seeing their faces light up when they have those aha moments and something works for them. For me, when I've done an illustration and I know that it's, or what is success to me, what I define success as is if I've drawn an illustration or a concept that makes sense to people. If it doesn't work, then I have to go back to the drawing board. I want people to come off like they've learned something that it's worked for them. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's the payoff.
You're speaking to the 12-year-old tenderfoot.
Yes, they can be a lot of fun.
Oh, yes. Yes. You just mentioned, aha moment with showing a scout different things and all. How about when making the decision to write the book? Was there a specific moment where I'm sharing ideas on the forums and all this, and then, with the scouts and all, was there one point where you said, you know what, this isn't enough, I'm going to write a book?
Yeah, I've actually, the way the forums work, they can almost be like a black hole of information. Once you go down the rabbit hole of the forum, you can get sucked in a way that consumes your life. And I remember, getting in there and I would, you could be into a thread, and this happened a few times. In fact, I don't even know if I could find some of the illustrations I've done in hammock forums, because you'll be in a thread. Somebody will say, hey, what about this? I'm like, hey, I could draw that. And I'd be so much clearer than trying to, like you said, 1,000 words or a one quick illustration. So I'd often do that. I'd draw something up, post it inside of a forum, and then it would get buried, and you would never be able to find it again. And if I was smart back then, I probably would have, kept track of all the URLs of all of these illustrations.
Mm-hmm.
And then I could, start linking back. But by that time, there was just so much that was buried. I ended up trying to start forum posts or forum threads with an illustration as the leading element. Sometimes those took a lot more time, though, because you didn't want to just draw, basic stuff that maybe you didn't think is as impactful. But certainly there are a few illustrations that I tried to post on the forum that were maybe a trending topic in a couple of different threads. And I'm like, hey, let me just summarize all of this in an illustration. And some of those illustrations became a little bit more highly viewed and became, those sticky posts.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, a lot of those illustrations got lost. And as I was talking with folks on the forums, there were some discussions about maybe creating, as they have in the past, a video thread. Basically, any type of a video would get tagged into a certain collection, mm-hmm. as well as illustrations. But for me, it became a discussion point. Like, how can we? Because I felt like I was repeating myself a lot, and I think that's another thing about forums that happens. Right? Is you become like. There's a little bit of that irritation, like, man, why do we have to keep repeating this? If we could just point people to where that was solved or answered earlier on, that would solve a lot of those issues. So I actually started discussions with some of the then moderators of the forum, including Just Jeff, who was one of my mentors, or I would say, I was guided by a lot of his words. He has a blog as well. I don't know if you're planning on interviewing Jeff at all, but he has a fairly popular site. And honestly, my first approach was that. I said, Jeff, what do you think about this idea? You write the book and I'll illustrate it. And for a while, he was pretty excited about that. There was some interest there. But as we started talking, the realization, I think, for both of us was it was going to be a little more complicated and a lot more difficult than we thought. We passed around some ideas, but we decided that probably the best way to go, I would have to just do it all myself. And I realized that was kind of that moment for myself. Like, okay, could I tackle something like this? Because the other thing that I felt too was, even though I had a lot of notoriety, you might say, within the forums and there was the illustrations that I had, I didn't know if I really had the clout to say, hey, I'm an expert. I know what I'm talking about. I've been around the block a few times. So that's always a little bit scary, when you're going to, because when you write a book, you're putting your name on the line. You're putting a lot of research, a lot of that background, and hopefully is going to fly. I tried to play it as low key as possible. I didn't, to me, it was just, I wanted to have fun with this. When I realized that I was going to do it myself, that was my approach. Like, I'm just going to have fun with it. And there, I guess the support that I received also from family and friends is, you know what, when you do a book, you don't have to worry about, don't go into it thinking you're going to get some, you know, big publisher to sign on or anything. So I didn't. I said, you know, I'm just going to do it and have fun. So that's what I did. I put together the outline, and at the time I had selected, in fact, I think they're all listed in the front of the book, many of the, you might call them the big names of hammocks at the time.
Sure.
Were my reviewer. They were part of my team that I would send them copy. I would send them selections of the book. And it's nearing the end of the publication cycle. I sent them, hard copies to just say, hey, look this over, review it with me. So I had a lot of support just in that feedback. Like, hey, this is good. I like this. You know, maybe you need to word this a little bit differently. And it was a great education process for myself as well, just to get that kind of vetting. So there's a lot of great people that supported me, in getting that book put together. But really it all started with, how can we get all of these illustrations and information? Because to me, I felt like the book was a way to very easily and quickly have a quick reference for all this wealth of information that a person could use in one place. And of course, I added a lot of other things that were maybe ancillary to hammock camping, because I'm a big backpacker myself. I love getting out in the woods. And so to me, hammock camping was also an opportunity to extend, you know, backpacking techniques and camping techniques, which was a great way to kind of expand the book a little bit more than I initially had thought. So there's a little bit of that in the book as well.
Yeah. Yeah. We saw that you definitely gave a lot of nice primers on other techniques. So it's almost like somebody who might be being introduced to backpacking through their first experience with hammock camping might also get some good pointers about things like hygiene and camp selection and clothing and things like that. So I thought that was really a great approach to it, just to add that in.
Great. Yeah.
Was there a lot of research that you did that simply failed to make it into your book?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. There had to be a point where I just had to say, I got to get it out. And I've been collecting, you know, that research has never ended. You know, once the book got published, there's a lot of information in there, you know, different hammock styles. Like I really had to decide how deep did I want to go and how broad did I want to go? And so, you know, vetting that, I think it's one of, I don't have a lot of complaints about the book, but I do have some inquiries about, you know, certainly it feels very good as a primer to hammock camping, a primer to hammocks in general, and how new people can really, you know, that's where I've got a lot of great support from people. And, but there's been that question, like, well, what about people that have done it for a while? What about us hangers that have been around the block a few more times and we've, you know, what is there for us? And it's funny because my first response is hammock camping that complicated? Should there really be an advanced hammock camping book, you know, a 400 series or something? I just couldn't, at the time, to me, and really still, I think of hammocks as one of the most basic, simple structures for sleeping and camping in, that's possible. And to me, trying to complicate that sounds like the opposite of what hammock camping should be. You know, don't make it any more complicated than it needs to be. So to me, what do you think of when you think of advanced hammock camping? Or I don't know. Now, since then, I've certainly realized, okay, I think what they're talking about, and there's a lot more, and maybe that's what I should have put in the book at the beginning, but that's what's coming around the corner. There is a lot more to hammock camping. It's just really, how far do you want to go into it?
That's one of the things I would think that's great about with the hammock camping, because really it's something where you can actually make it as simple or as complicated as you want.
Oh, yeah.
There's so many options out there between all the types of hammocks, tarps, insulation, everything. So it's, you know, it's very personal, which, you know, it could be a good or a tough thing for, especially for a beginner.
It's really one of the challenges I've found in talking about hammock camping, because, you know, new users often get overwhelmed because they see a lot of how that can go, you know, all of the underquilts and top quilts and the little doodads, you might see the connection points and the tarps. And yeah, it can, I, on one hand, it's awesome because you can customize and modularize your hammock experience just the way you want it to be. And for a lot of those beginners, though, that's where I've tried to, how can I simplify it to a point where it's very approachable, and which it really is, and then lead people down that path and say, you know what, this is where hammocks really have the advantage over any other shelter style, especially for those that are looking to really personalize what you want to have. You know, when you go to a store and you want to pick up a shelter, it often is, or here's a tent and it's all ready for you. People understand that concept. But if you don't like, you know, if it's just not quite big enough for you, or the tarp is just a little too small, or, you know, you basically have to buy a whole new tent. There's not a lot of modularity that you find in a tent. You know, you can't just swap out the poles for a lighter set. You don't really, you know, customize the fabrics the way that you know, get into the right colors. You basically, here it is, it's a box system. Where hammocks, yeah, that's really what turns them so much into a much broader system, because you can customize them to the nth degree.
It's the camping system for nerds. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. But also, you know, hammocks, if you've been watching hammocks for the last decade, they have really spiked. They're reaching that tipping point. It's maybe even past the tipping point in terms of acceptance at a certain level. You know, on the college campuses, I work at a college, and we've just seen over the last decade a huge rise in the popularity of these hammocks, because they are so simple. They're easy to set up. They're great for lounging. Mm-hmm. So they really can be so approachable. So you don't have to be yes, you can be a nerd and do it, but you don't have to be. You can just be having a lot of fun. And that's where a lot of people, you know, get introduced to it. And it really is a gateway drug to the Shugs of the world, right? Where you go and have just so much fun with them.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Just curious to stay on the book writing for a second. Is writing something that's kind of in your family? I saw I think your wife just published a book. Is that part of the support that you got from when you were writing your book, or was there a trade-off? How did that work out?
Certainly. You know, this is just the irony of how life works, right? Like I wouldn't consider myself a writer. Now, certainly I have, you know, I've done a lot of writing in a work setting, in my, you know, marketing and that sort of stuff. But approaching a book has never been on my wish list, you know, where some people grow up their whole lives like, I'm going to be a writer. That would be my wife. My wife has been planning to do a book series for a while. She's been working on it for years. She just published a book, the first of the series, The Perfect Outcast. And she's had a lot of fun with it. But it has been this kind of ebb and flow. Like, my book took off and was published before hers finished. And what we're trying to do now is do this back and forth editing thing to get hers recognized and out there. She has it's a fun book. So I guess in a sense, it is a little bit in the family. I think for us, it's about what I said before, just having fun with it, not getting so caught up in, you know, maybe what the world is thinking or how things are supposed to be run, but just doing it for the love of that passion that you have. And I think that to me is what I hope comes out of the book, is that people can feel the passion that I have for, and it almost sounds kind of funny, but having passion for hammock camping. But to me, there is that, but there's also that passion of helping other people learn and explore and experience.
And then actually feeding off of that, on a lot of your trip reports and the biographies and your posts, you reference scouting a lot, and we talked about it earlier, being a scoutmaster and all. How important is scouting in the way you think about camping and hammock camping, or just getting outdoors in general?
You know, I wrote an article for Scouting Magazine a couple of years ago, and that was one of the things that I mentioned. I have seen in my experience as a scoutmaster, I've worked in troops in Virginia, all the way back here in the American Southwest. And one thing I have seen that has been similar is that a lot of the youth in this generation just don't have that same kind of excitement and energy of going outdoors. You know, when I was a scout, that was what was so fun about scouting, was that field experience. And getting some of these younger scouts to get out and have fun camping and hiking is like pulling teeth. But I found in my experience, and what I wrote in that article for Scouting Magazine, is how hammock camping can revolutionize that outdoor experience and re-energize it in a way that I have not seen anything else. You know, you see that in scouting right now. They're throwing everything they can to get these youth to get engaged in the outdoors. You know, there are all these different activities, from BMX to the roller skating and skate parks. You know, you see all these new activities that they're trying to drive to get the youth active again. Mm-hmm. And I found something as simple as hammocks when we as a scout troop, we got together and we said, you know what, let's work on a merit badge. We'll start with maybe the textile merit badge. But for the activity, we're going to make our own hammocks. And I cannot tell you how excited every time I've done that with different troops, not even my own, I've just been so excited. And I've had scoutmasters come back and say, how did you do that? How can you, how did you create those hammocks? So I put a post on my blog on how to make a hammock in 3 minutes. You know, it's really not that difficult, but what a difference it's made in the youth and the excitement they have. We have scouts now that are in our troop just the last couple of years. They're like, we want to go on a trip every month. They're like, we want to go. And even in the wintertime, they want to do hammock camping because they have so much fun with it. Even though they might freeze their tails off, they're having a blast because it has made a huge difference in re-energizing the outdoor program.
Yeah, because anybody can grab a tent and go out there. And, you know, we've been using tents for years. When I was in Scouts, you know, throughout the 80s, it was a tent and probably a good big 7-8 pound tent, two-man tent. And, you know, who would have thought of sleeping in a hammock at that time?
Right. Well, you know, so the weight certainly is a big difference, but also the way that they have fun with them. You know, we have scouts that'll, now I'm pretty conservative when it comes to like stacking hammocks, for example. I've been to scout camps where I've seen scouts stack hammocks 10, 12 high, but that's part of the fun of it too. Like they'll stack their hammocks really close to each other and create these little buddy teams. Sometimes they'll stack bunk bed style. So it's a way that they can have a fun with the system instead of just, you know, a boring old pup tent. They can actually do things with it. They sit in them and talk. I don't encourage them to be too rowdy in them, but sometimes they'll just swing back and forth. But they do so much with them. We did a 50. Well, we do a 50 miler every other year.
Wow.
And in that 50 miler program, we introduced hammock camping, and that has just been a blast. You know, so we'll hang up their tarps. We'll set up these little, you know, patrol camps. And it is. It reminds me when I was a scout having these little hammock Ewok villages up in the trees with the boys just having a blast. And to me, as a scout leader, it is, you know, that's the reward. That's what makes it worth it, when you can see people having that much fun and engaging with each other and exploring those opportunities.
Interesting.
I know somebody who's running a venture crew, and it's co-ed, and hammocks actually solved the problem of who was sleeping with who.
Oh, yeah. Perfect. Yeah, that's a question that comes up a lot that I field is, you know, what about privacy? What about the buddy system? And my answer has been what you just mentioned. It solves all of those problems because it keeps the youth in a private enclosed shelter. And you don't have to worry about some of these other issues that have crept into scouting over the years or that people worry about. It actually makes it that much safer, more private. So, yeah, I think it's a great solution.
So a little while ago, you said about working on the college campus and seeing the kids hanging. Actually, I believe this spring or summer, I could have been down in the Carolinas. They were talking. Might have even been some of the colleges were banning it because the number of – there's so many people. Now, is this this big spike – that we're seeing, is this just a short trend, or, you know, is it a quick fad? Because we're even seeing lots of, it seems every few days or so there's something on Kickstarter, even new hammock camping companies and all. Or is it you think it's going to keep going, or is it just a short fad?
Well, now you're going to ask me to put on my marketing hat for a minute.
There you go.
So now that I've become like one of the kings of hammock nerds, I have feelers out there and keep track of a lot of that media attention that hammocks get across the country. And it has been interesting to watch. And as I mentioned, we really are at that tipping point of hammock camping, or not just hammock camping, but hammocks in general. And that tipping point, we're seeing it. There's a saturation in the market. So right now, if you go to Amazon, for example, and just do a search for hammocks, it used to be that there were three top brands, Grand Trunk, Eno, and even Hammock Gear were some of the three top ones that you'd always see. And really that's where Grand Trunk really got its popularity, because they sold a very inexpensive, lightweight hammock, the Grand Trunk Ultralight, for $20, and like everybody got it. Well, as that popularity has spiked, we're now seeing that influx. I get calls every month from different Chinese manufacturers that want me to promote their hammocks. They have, you know, they're just a dime a dozen now. You can get hammocks anywhere for any price, and they're certainly saturated on places, you know, these online stores like Amazon, for example. And of course, in social media, I see it all the time. New vendors coming up that are trying to talk about hammocks and sell a new hammock. Even on Kickstarter, we see about every month there's been a new Kickstarter campaign. And so certainly, yes, we're seeing a saturation. And is it a trend? It is a trend. And it has reached that point of saturation where all those other sideline vendors are now saying, hey, we got one again on the bandwagon. Other indicators that we're seeing of the popularity in this outdoor trend is with some of the main manufacturers. Just this last year at the Outdoor Retailer Show, Therm-a-Rest, one of the popular mattress and sleeping companies, came out with their line of hammocks, a full line of hammocks. They just introduced a tarp and a bug net. And in fact, I'm in the middle of reviewing those right now. They're just coming out to market. They've got a little like a weather shield, a aluminized mylar weather shield. So some of these are niche pieces. When one of the main vendors in hammocks is Eagle Nest Outfitters, Eno. Yeah. And they, you know, they started off with just a basic parachute nylon hammock. And they've maintained that status quo for years. They've only in the last few years, you've seen a spike in their product offering because of the demand for things like customized tarps and under, you know, insulation options. They've really rebounded on their insulation. They've come up with a whole bunch of new types of hammocks because they're realizing that while those, what as I mentioned earlier on, the gateway drug for hammocks are the Eno hammocks. I cannot tell you, Eno is the brand to beat when it comes to hammocks in the marketplace. Everybody knows that brand. Everybody uses it. But it's really the gateway drug because everybody, once they use it for a little while, they're like, hey, this is comfortable. This is fun. That's when they start looking up other options. And that's where we're seeing, because we're seeing some of that sales trade-off, like again, from Eno to these other manufacturers who are selling de facto hammock camping options, you know, like an integrated jungle hammock with bug netting and tarp. So you've seen a spike now at Eno to try to reclaim some of that market share. They're seeing, or they're promoting new products that include lightweight hammocks, lightweight suspension, things that have been commonplace for years with hammock forums, like the Whoopee Sling. When the Whoopee Sling came out with, you know, the ultralight Dyneema Amsteel cordage, that was kind of like the fringe of hammock camping. You know, just the ultra nerds were doing that stuff. Now we're seeing mainstream manufacturers like Eagle Nest Outfitters, Therm-a-Rest, others that are selling the same cordage in a way that they felt comfortable that it's going to work for the mass market. It is interesting to watch. Now, what's the trend going to be in the next few years? Well, we're going to start seeing some of that cannibalization. The market is going to, once it gets to be fully saturated and people start to really determine what are the right products that are good to use, right? Because we've got all kinds of Chinese copycats out there.
Right.
What are the brands that are really good? Then we're going to start seeing a little bit of that market shrink. So we're just hitting that tipping point. It's going to be probably a year or two. We're going to start to see that level off and the brands that are going to make it in the next few years. Now, we're always going to have cottage vendors. The cottage vendors are they're the staples to hammock camping. But see, even some of those have broken out of the cottage kind of arena and are much bigger now. I mean, some of them are doing $1 million sales and they're still kind of operating out of a warehouse. So those kinds of things are going to be changing in the next few years. I know that Hammock Gear, for example, they're going to be moving to manufacturing. They're going to be growing a lot more in the next few years. They were one of the beginning vendors for insulation in the hammock world. So it's really interesting to see, but we are going to see a little bit of that tip off in the next few years. It's certainly reaching that saturation phase right now.
Yeah. One of the things I think that the market really needs, and certainly I'm sure all of our listeners know I'm a big fan of my Hennessy, but I think a lot of the vendors are still kind of catching up with the idea of selling the camping package, right? Because you see a lot of reviews and people go out and they just have a hammock and maybe suspension and they review it poorly because they really don't understand that to do camping, you need a system.
Exactly.
You know, there's certainly you need at minimum, some kind of under insulation if you're doing any kind of camping at all. And you're probably going to want weather protection as well. And certainly, I think you're seeing more of that. But, you know, even if Thermarest has a full line, unless they're selling it as a kit that you build, you know, I have a concern about it becoming as mainstream as it could.
Right. Well, and one of the things that I saw really early on when manufacturers were coming was that lack of bundling, even at a basic level. When, as was mentioned earlier, the complaints started coming in and hammocks were being banned at different state parks. One of the reasons was because hammocks were being sold with these cheap rope suspensions.
Yeah.
And while they worked, and even if, honestly, there are most of the trees out there, I will be honest, as I've talked to arborists, I've talked to the Leavenworth Trade Center, there's not a lot of damage that can be done with some of those rope systems if they're used correctly. It's really, well, we can get into that a little bit later, but the bottom line is, even if it's just perception, that perception has gone a long way to destroy hammock camping in some of these places. But even because these companies are not selling good, tree-friendly straps, it has caused lots of problems. I brought on a couple years ago, when I was seeing a lot of this intake or these problems arising of hammocks being banned at different state parks and whatnot, I reached out to all these different manufacturers who I had created relationships with, mm-hmm. everything from Hennessy down to like Eagle's Nest. And several of them agreed, like, we need to, because it's in their best interest to make sure that some of that bundling happens, or at least that they get rid of, like, I was telling some manufacturers flat out, you guys need to get rid of this rope suspension. Don't sell it. Don't put it in there. Do something else. But yeah, the lack of bundling in that regard is tough. Now I get it. You know, put on my marketing hat again. I understand. Yeah, you want to upsell. Why put a free pair of straps with a hammock when you can sell it extra? The problem is that the people don't buy those initially. They'll use the cheap stuff. They'll use the ropes. They'll use whatever until it becomes a problem. So I think at some point, some of that bundling is essential to making hammocks work. Mm-hmm. And then, like you said, outside of that, that's what I love. I love the Hennessy model as well. Hennessy is one of my favorite brands, partly because it's a great kit. Everything has been well thought out. Everything works well together. And I think it is true. Some of these other kits or other hammock companies would benefit from having a kit system. And we're seeing a lot more of that. If you're familiar with Sierra Madre Research, when they came out with their New Bay shelter.
Yeah.
They quickly added on to that, like, hey, here's a kit version as well, because people got confused a little bit that it was an all-in-one system. It looked like it had a hammock, a bug net, and everything. It really didn't. It didn't have a hammock. But now they sell it as a kit, so you can get a hammock and the shelter all-in-one. You're seeing that with Eagle's Nest as well. Now they sell quite a few hammock kits that come basically pre-packaged. They've got a Jungle Nest Jungle Link. They've got a one link system. And what's cool about that is you can go to their site and now kind of like what some of the cottage vendors are doing really is customizing. Hey, I want this hammock. I want this tarp and I want this strap and suspension system when I buy this kit. So we're seeing a lot more of that actually where this bundling of products, instead of just piecemealing them, the a la carte method. Mm-hmm. They're now creating a much more simplified bundling method. So we are seeing that and it is exciting. But, you know, for the most part, if you go on Amazon, yeah, you'll just find you can buy a hammock and then you're left with, well, what's left? What next? And that's tough.
Yeah. Yeah. If there's not somebody walking you through it, I've already recounted several stories on this podcast about some really cold nights I had. I'm a very cold sleeper and a hammock is not a good introduction to how cold you can be at night.
Well, and Yale goes into that too. I think. For years, as we've become accustomed to tent camping and camping outdoors, it almost goes without saying that you need a sleeping bag and you need a pad. Those are common understood methods. But I think a lot of people, even in my own experiences, I've done my research and interviewed people. Most people think of a sleeping pad as a comfort option, not an insulation option.
Mm-hmm.
It's really only those people that camp beyond summer that realize that they need to have, when they sleep on the ground, some type of insulation and that's what the pad is really for. I think it's in the next few years as the, well, actually it's probably going to be another I would say 5 or so years, really. It's going to take some more time for hammock camping as a niche market to get known enough that people realize that, hey, the hammock and the tarp, that's just like a tent, right? It doesn't have your sleeping bag. It doesn't have, you're going to need an insulation. So those are those common sense things that aren't common yet. They're going to get, as hammock camping becomes more widespread, that's going to be more of the common vernacular. Like, okay, I've got the tarp and this shelter system, but I also need the insulation system as well.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing that a lot, especially when I know when I got into it, seeing Jonathan's hammocks and all, you know, his first time I saw with the Hennessy, but then really seeing on one of the Boy Scout trips, Underquilt on his other hammock, not the Hennessy, the other one I forgot.
Yeah, I've got a butt in a sling hammock.
Yeah, but he had the whole Underquilt for that because it was in the middle of January. There's 2 feet of snow on the ground. And I really didn't understand the whole concept of it with the, okay, you're hanging half a sleeping bag underneath your hammock and that keeps you warm. How? So it was.
It's not completely obvious. What?
It is weird. Isn't that a weird concept? It totally blows people's minds because in our Western culture, we're so used to sleeping on beds and sleeping in this conformity system. Mm-hmm. That breaking out of it, even sleeping in a hammock off of a diagonal, right? So you're sleeping, that has been the biggest aha moment for people is like, oh my gosh, you don't just sleep straight. Well, yeah, you sleep straight, but you're off an angle. All of those concepts, there's a lot of nuances that because of our Western culture, it's ingrained in us. And so it takes time to unlearn those systems.
Getting back with the trees and all, now, I have the tree straps, the 2.5-inch straps, I believe, from Dutch. How about, I mean, it really, you said that the tree bark, the bark can handle it for right. Using the ropes. Now, actually, my first hammock was a Yukon, and the same thing, it came with the cheap rope and everything. But really, it comes down to, you know, one or two people using the same, you know, the same trees isn't going to be hurting the tree at all, but with hammock camping becoming so much more popular, when you got lots and lots of people using the same tree, then that's really where it comes into having a problem, right?
Absolutely. And so here's what I'll toe the line in terms of what I say in my book, what I say online, and this is where I toe the line. We need to, as a community, agree that hammock camping needs to be done in a safe and responsible manner. That includes having tree-saving straps mm-hmm. that will protect these resources for a long period of time. Now, I want to be very clear that all of these resources, just like when we sleeping on tents, the Leave No Trace Center has been a great resource for me. We've been partners working with, you know, updating hammock camping a couple of years ago, or maybe it's just been a year, when some of this hammock camping fervor has reached a pitch where people are concerned about it. You know, we've been working with the Leave No Trace Center. And it's interesting because the scientists, they have scientists that they work with that go out in the field for years to study this stuff and find out what is the damage caused. And this isn't just hammock camping, but tent camping and all kinds of outdoor recreation. And these scientists, so I was working with one, and it's interesting, their perspective is that hammock camping is one of the least of their worries, one of the least worries. But that said, they also recognize that they need to have these standards so that as it reaches a little bit further up, that it's not going to go south. Mm-hmm. Most of the trees that we work with are very robust. They're, you know, they have worse enemies out there, from beetles, from fire, from animals. If you've seen a tree debarked by a beaver, or scrubbed off by a bear or an antler, there are a lot worse things out there for trees. But irresponsible human behavior can cause a lot of damage. And that usually comes with ropes. When people put ropes, particularly those very thin ropes, you know, we're talking 2 to 5 millimeter rope around a tree, it can cause some scarring, it can cause some flaking, and at the very worst, it can cause the girdling. The damage that we typically see with hammock camping is superficial. it's often the visible part of the exterior of the tree. But that's enough for a lot of land managers when they see that, that's enough to say, hey, we don't want that kind of damage on a tree, right? It's more of a visible damage, but that's enough to say, especially on popular spaces. Like if you've gone to the Appalachian Trail or you go to the Shenandoah Park, there are places that are so heavily impacted that, yeah, if you had hammock camper after hammock camper every day for the whole year, you could see some serious damage if they're using rope-based systems. So that's where we really need to be concerned about is the parks, the city, national, state parks. We always have to be very careful everywhere we go. So that's why straps are such an important part of the system, is to make sure that the damage, that visible damage is lessened, but also the long-term damage never happens.
Yeah, so it's not so much what you're doing, but it's more about who you are or your way of being that they're trying to encourage.
Right. There is certainly a lot more damage that happens, especially with, if you ask the Leave No Trace Center, the damage that they're mostly concerned about is tent camping, because they create huge dead zones where plant life doesn't grow back or rebound for a generation. Mm-hmm. And we get these compact sites that they really try to minimize that. The Leave No Trace Center has recommended, they love hammocks because you can spread out. You can minimize that damage and any kind of impact, because you can go out of a site and no one would ever know you're there. And if when you use tree-friendly straps, there should be absolutely no visible trace that you were in a spot, and it's great.
Yeah, Dutch said the same thing. He said that he felt hammock camping was a good way to continue and increase the preservation of a lot of the heavy impact trails. For that reason, he said, it can allow people to spread out as they camp. The non-congested camp to even the stealth camping. I'm not sure he's specifically promoting it. but if you can leave no trace, then that's probably sufficient.
Well, and that's really the definition. If you were to ask the Leave No Trace Center to use the term stealth camping, that's what they mean. It doesn't mean that you're doing anything illegal. It means that you're going and, some of the principles of Leave No Trace include camping on durable surfaces, hiking and camping on durable surfaces, but also being considerate of other trail users. Mm. And so by camping in a location where you're not being, you're off the beaten trail, you're in a pristine area, so you've spread out your impact. If nobody finds you, that's fantastic, because you're doing it legally, you're doing it appropriately, and you're doing it in a way that respects other visitors so that they're not going to be impacted by your visit, whether visibly, verbally or through auditory means, or when they come to a site that you were in, they're not going to see that evidence. And yeah, that's another reason why the Leave No Trace Center loves hammock camping for that reason.
Mm. All right. Off on a side, sort of a side note, you're clearly an educator hammock camping. If there was one thing that you could teach to everyone, be it hammock camping or not hammock camping, what would it be?
Well, let's stick to hammock camping.
Fair enough.
So when I came up with my first illustration and my book on hammock camping, I thought I came up with a lot of clever, easy ways to help people set up hammocks. And I found that even then it was like a 3 or 4 step process. And for the last couple of years, I've kind of settled on 2 tips that can, I think, help any beginner in setting up a hammock, to get rid of a lot of the pacing and the distances. It really comes down to 2 things. And now I got to remember what those 2 things are. Oh, okay, here they are. All right, number one, you want to hang the hammock with a good sag. And number 2, sleep diagonally.
And that's it.
That's it. Now, getting to those can be somewhat of an education, right? To know, well, what is a good sag? A lot of people that I see, especially those that pick up the Eno hammocks, right? They stretch them out pretty tight.
Try and make them as straight as possible. Pull the ropes as tight as
possible. Yeah, they want to make them flat like a typical bed.
Yep.
So the first thing is, no, hang the hammock with a good sag, because that's also going to open up the second tip, which is sleeping or laying diagonally. If you hang a hammock too tight, you can't lay diagonally. It's impossible. So the 2 really go together. But if you can do that, that's really the trick to me. And that's what I tell everybody now that I meet, is those 2 tips. When I do a presentation on hammock camping at REI or something, like, get a good sag and lay diagonally. And that's going to make all the difference. That's And I love that moment when people lay down in a hammock and they turn just a few degrees and bam, they're in that kind of ergonomically flat lay. It's just like, oh, wow, this is awesome. I love it. This is so comfortable. I'm like, yes, that's what we're talking about.
Hmm.
That's great. So, outside of that, you have any other projects coming up? You've been working on version 2 of the Ultimate Hang for a while, and is it going to be coming out soon?
Yeah, so actually, I guess I should have expected this question earlier on.
actually, I saw it on Facebook.
Yeah, I just posted something on Facebook, so this is very apropos. I've been working on a second edition for years, and you know, I think for the first, I guess I could say ever since my first edition came out, I've been working on a second edition. My first idea really was maybe every couple of months or every year, I would just take the old book and kind of refresh it and repost it. But after a while, I realized that, no, you know what? There is so much more content that I think is beneficial. So I've been revamping this book every year, trying to tweak it. And just this last year, it's all kind of come together. The book is really big. you know, the current format is like a 6x9 trade back, and it's been a fun book. It's easy to carry around. This next book is really, I don't want to say it's going to be the encyclopedia of hammock camping, but it certainly is a big fat book on hammock camping. The new book also talks about hanging indoors and using it as kind of this full-time system. So I try to be a little more even-handed about hammocks a little initially so that people realize that it's not just camping that we're talking about, but it's just hammocks in general.
Mm-hmm.
Then I've revamped the beginner section, so it's much more organized. I have a really good frequently asked questions section that addresses very briefly a lot of common misconceptions about hammocks. You know, after years of fielding questions, after years of being online and doing these presentations, I've taken all of that knowledge and all of that experience and put it back into the book so that these new generations and of people that are getting the hammocks can really benefit from years of experience and years of that approach. Now, that really wraps up what was in the first edition. The second edition goes beyond that. I've got a whole section on advanced hammock camping. And that section is huge. It covers all, this is where I've taken some of the concepts in the first edition that were, you might say were advanced topics. You know, and it's one thing that kind of overwhelms people in the first edition because I talk about all kinds of, you know, when you think about a way to connect a hammock to a tree, the first edition says, you know, here's like a dozen different ways to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've tried to break that apart to say, okay, here's, if you're a beginner, here's like one or two of the just basic ways to do it. You know, don't overwhelm yourself.
Right.
And I've put everything else into the advanced section. So the advanced section takes all of that, the nuances, and there are a ton more. I've got so many illustrations. Like the book is going to be a lot. There's a lot more text. I go into a lot more definitions and talking and explaining. There's also a ton more illustrations. The final section of the second edition that I'm really excited about is a do-it-yourself section. Mm. It's something that people have been asking for a long time. And so, you know, I've done a lot of illustrations on how to do your own gear over the years.
Mm-hmm.
So some of those illustrations are being revamped and put into this do-it-yourself section. And that section is pretty much all illustrations. It's just very visual. There's a lot of technical information there. This book tries to simplify that into some easy-to-use patterns that what my hope is that I want people to take it and modify it. And that's what I've seen over the years with anything that I've drawn. For example, one of the most popular ones that people use of mine is the poncho liner underquote.
Right.
You know, I just drew up some very basic instructions, and it's been so fun to see people take that and then modify it, you know, take it to the next level. Like, hey, I took your poncho liner underquote and I did it this way or I did it that way. So that's kind of the approach to this is to give the basics. But that do-it-yourself section is almost as long as the rest of the book. And that kind of posed a problem. So in terms of answering the question about when is it coming out, well, honestly, I was hoping it would already be out. I was hoping that everything would be in place and ready for the Christmas holiday. That's not going to happen. We got with an editor a couple weeks ago, and the book is just too thick.
Yeah.
And where that becomes a problem is that, you know, I want a book that's easy to use. It opens up, it's not going to be hard to read or use. They even recommended splitting the book up into a couple of books. And I've really struggled with that because my job here, my goal is not to fleece people out of their money. I want people to have an experience that seems coherent. So what we're doing now is we're going back to the drawing board and reformatting the book into a larger size. I know for some people that's probably not ideal. They're not going to maybe like a bigger book in terms of dimensions. The current dimensions, I'll tell you, are going to be about 8 inches by 10 inches. So there's a little secret. So that's about as big in terms of height and width that we are now looking at. The problem is the entire book has to be redesigned. The entire flow, which is frustrating because some of the illustrations are designed for a page layout. So we may have to go back. And if I say we, I often just mean me, right? I have to go back and...
That's the royal we.
And the royal we, right? I have to go back and redraw some of those illustrations or reformat stuff. So it's going to be probably a few more months to finish that out. It was very frustrating and disappointing to know that we weren't going to make this first deadline, but I think overall it's going to be a better experience for people. I have fielded some questions, and this has been my approach too. I'm limited on the printing format based on the publisher that I've chosen. There's only a few bindings. Actually, there's only one binding I can actually pick. But I would love to have a spiral binder. It would make it much more like a textbook, especially for the do-it-yourself section. Mm-hmm. But I am going to try to design it with a very generous gutter so that for those people that want to, if they want to slice off the binding and spiral bind it, that would be, a fantastic approach. I probably would do the same thing. But as it stands, it's going to be perfect bound and be a very nice, hopefully a really nice looking book, as well as a very functional book. But I would say look for it at the beginning of the new year. So the first quarter of 2016 will be the ultimate hang 2. And I think I've come up with a different, subtitle to it because it's really a definitive book on hammock camping or hammocks plus a huge do it yourself section.
Wow. Great.
Fair enough. Well, you know what Douglas Adams said about deadlines, right?
What's that?
He said, I love deadlines. I love the whooshing noise they make as they go by.
Well, that's definitely happened to me more than once on this project. It is a long-term project, but I'm really excited to show it to everybody.
So you've got, you're going to keep doing the product reviews on your website and all?
Oh, yeah. I've got a long list of product reviews. Do you want to know what some of them are?
Love to hear.
So I've got a whole series on the Hennessy hammock. So Tom and I have been working together. He sent me a couple of hammocks, so I've got to get those reviews out. I've got a series of videos on the Hennessy that I'm really excited about. There's just the basics of how to use the Hennessy hammock, all the different knobs and doodads. Like, how do these work? How are they supposed to go? So
I got to interrupt here. Your video on the 30-degree hang for the tarp was a game changer for me.
Oh, great, great.
It totally changed using the tarp.
Oh, good. Yeah, for me as well. Like, I had an aha moment as well, and I just was so excited I made a video about it. But from now, like, I actually have gone back and loved, even if it's not a Hennessy, hooking a tarp directly to the suspension. I'm like, this is so fun, and it works every single time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we're going to do a couple more videos on the Hennessy to show how these different things connect and work. And I've also got, I think I mentioned earlier in this podcast, Thermarest sent me some of their new gear that's coming out, tarps, their warmer kind of, I call it a weather shield, which is kind of what it is. Mm-hmm. I also have Go Outfitters has sent me, they've got two different hammocks, just a basic hammock as well as a jungle hammock. And they've got a new tarp that came out that I just reviewed. So those will be coming out before the new year. I've got to get those published here in the next week. And what else do I have on the docket? Oh, I've got a whole bunch of Dutch bling. Actually, I should probably walk over. I've got a whole room dedicated to hammocks. I keep joking to my wife that we should create like a hammock museum, but then I realized like there's only like 3 people in the world that would probably be interested in
they're on all this call hammocks. Right now.
Probably on this call, right? Like I have almost every hammock you can imagine that's on the market, and every once in a while, I do get rid of most of them after I've reviewed them and tested them, and I often give them away to scout groups and stuff. But yeah, I still have a ton of hammocks, but in there I've got a shelf dedicated to my gear review. So I've got lots of gear that's ready to be reviewed and ready to be sent out. So yeah, it's just a matter of, I keep telling everybody that sends me gear, because I get requests every week to review it. I say, well, I'm really trying to finish my book. So keep that in mind. You know, some people, if they have deadlines and stuff, I try to maintain those as well as I can, but it is tough to balance everything. But I should have several reviews coming out in the next couple of weeks.
Now, with all these reviews, that's going to be a great excuse to get out into the outdoors and all, huh?
Yeah.
Or is it too overwhelming?
Going out with the scouts was also my excuse. Like every time I go out with the scouts, I usually have a new hammock to test out. Sometimes, you know, it's a blessing and a curse, because I'll be honest, not every hammock that I test is really that amazing or comfortable, but I have to test it. Sometimes those reviews never see the light of day because the manufacturer decides that they don't want my review posted. So I usually give, and if you're familiar with how I've done reviews, I don't want to be sponsored. I do not want to have that level of responsibility, you might say. Or also, I don't want to be kind of sold out to any particular hammock. When people send me stuff, I want to say, look, I want to be completely honest with this. I usually give people the right of first refusal.
Mm-hmm.
So if I give, and I want to respect them as well. Like I've got some hammocks that honestly were not ready for the market. They were horrible. And I told them such. I said, hey, these hammocks have some serious problems. You probably want to fix them. And they did, and they've done that. They've taken them back. They've done some repairs or some changes in the market before they go out. And I want to give them that respect as well to say, here's your chance. But if they say they still want it to be reviewed, I will send it out. And I don't think any of my reviews have been any that are horrible in the sense that the product didn't really meet my expectations. But there are some that I think were just kind of ho-hum. You know, they weren't that fantastic. And some of those manufacturers weren't very happy with me, but I said, hey, that's tough beans. That's what I want to be honest with my readers. So I try to maintain that as well as I can.
Well, that makes a lot of sense.
What I do, I do get a lot more gear that is sometimes prototype, or people, they think it's hot stuff and they want to put it out there, but it didn't work. I can tell you one of the craziest designs that I've ever seen. This was a couple of years ago, actually, when Brandon came out with his war bonnet and everybody was talking about the foot box.
Right.
And what, you know, this is such an amazing thing. And for anybody that hasn't slept in a war bonnet and they hear the foot box, I think they imagine there's some panel of fabric that somehow drops the feet in a different way. But that's not the case. Just to set the record straight, the war bonnet is just a basic hammock. There's nothing spectacular about the fabric. It's a rectangular piece of fabric. The foot box is just a triangle of fabric that encloses that foot area and creates a pouch, you might say, that prevents the feet from hopping off the hammock. So it does create a nice pouch, but it's not like an extra pocket or some type of a bag, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
But I had this one manufacturer who, again, they had never seen the war bonnet, they'd never tested it, but they wanted to make a foot box, and they sent me a hammock that literally had a hole cut out of the bottom of the hammock and a tube sewn into it that your feet were supposed to slip into. And I think in concept, it sounded like a really good idea, but it did not work at all. And, because, you know, if you have a Hennessy, if you have one of the old style, the bottom entry hammocks, you know, how once you get into the fabric and it tightens up and it kind of seals that in,
mm-hmm.
you know, cause the hammock is all, it all gathers together.
It's under tension, right?
Yeah. Under tension. And that's what happened with this hammock, is that once you get into it, that opening snaps shut, so you can't stick your feet in anyway. But if you do, just like in Hennessy, you force your feet into this pocket, you know, your calves get pinched, and then your feet are kind of hanging. It was the most awkward. Yeah, it didn't work. And thankfully, the manufacturer agreed, and you've never seen it in the light of day. We'll never say who the manufacturer was. But that was one of the crazier things that I've ever tested.
Huh. All right. Well, one of the things we like to do with our interviews is asking something completely, completely off topic. So
I'm ready.
All right. When you're out backpacking, either with the scouts or on your own or all, eating, trail food and all. Do you make it yourself or do you buy the prepackaged?
Oh man, I love making food myself. And one of my favorite things to do is baking, which is not common in backpacking because, you know, I'm actually a huge fan of simple, easy meals. Like I usually do freezer bag meals, you know, throw something in a Ziploc bag, a freezer bag, and, you know, it just simplifies everything, creating and cleaning up and everything. But every once in a while, I will do some baking. And what I love to do is make a muffin mix, either do it myself or something. You can pick up one of those Jiffy mixes or whatever. And you can mix a few ingredients out in the field. And I just use a double pot. I've got a small, what is the pot that I use most often? A Geo or a MSR. Oh my gosh. It's so old. It's like completely, you know, blackened on the outside. I don't think I could even remember what kind of a pot
it is. It's not old, it's seasoned.
it's very seasoned. And then I bought one of those small wedding cake pans. You know, imagine the cake that's on the very top of a multi-layered cake. It's only 2 inches by 2 inches. So it fits perfectly into my little pot kit. And then I basically create a double-walled stove. So it works really well. I put a few rocks on the bottom so there's a layer of air, so you get some of that convection oven going on. Put a little oil on the inside, put my batter in there, and I'll bake up a muffin or all kinds of stuff inside that little double little oven. And it is so much fun. So yeah, I love cooking, not to the point where I'm like creating gourmet meals. It's mostly creating meals on the trail, and which is a lot of fun. Again, I think my experience being a scout leader and a dad is when you have youth, nothing makes camping more fun than to have really good food and something that you can, at the end of the day, like really enjoy. And when you can pull out of your little pot a fun blueberry muffin that's been cooked and it's warm and it's delicious, put some butter on it. Oh my gosh.
That's great. Now I do. That's something I'm going to definitely have to try. I make my own. I have a dehydrator that I use, and actually I use it quite often besides just making the trail food and all. What I like making, because making my own instead of buying the mountain houses and things like that, I do most of my backpacking with my son, who can be very picky, the 13-year-old boy. So there's always, no matter which one of those we pick, there's always one thing in it that, nah, I don't like that. So now by making your own, even making something similar to that, but just making it ourselves, I can leave that one item out or something like that. And it,
oh, yeah.
It goes back to like what you just said. It makes it a lot more enjoyable. Something that it's light and it's making yourself. And, you know, even it may be good, but one or two items, especially with the scouts, and there's always one of them there that doesn't like something or is allergic to something. So.
Right.
Yeah. I still have a cache of stuff that's been given to me as a people who know I camp. You know, my kids or whatever, they can afford getting me the mountain house for Christmas. But Mark really turned me on to making my homemade stuff too. It's just like the DIY. I have a little DIY top quilt that I made for myself. And with food, it's the same way. I think you enjoy it a lot more if you made it. You know, there's some real pleasure in having something that's crafted, that you crafted with your own.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. That's great.
And, you know, you get to brag about it to your... How much do you pay for dinner? What?
Well, and it's certainly a lot of fun too when you can, you know, if they've picked a mountain house that they don't like, or they're not having it for whatever reason. And I can just tell you, as a scout leader, it is so much fun. Like, we have done cookouts where the boys are eating ramen noodles, right? Which you could say, okay, you've kind of made your own meal. You brought ramen noodles, but we're like cooking steaks and, you know, cheesecake, and they're like, well, how did you bring that? Like, we're baking it, we're cooking it, we're having fun. You know, make it a fun experience for yourself. You don't have to suffer through a freeze-dried meal if you don't have to.
One time I showed them how to do a little bit more deluxe on the ramen noodles. I brought an egg, soft-boiled that, cracked that in, some fresh greens. You know, it looked a lot like going to a ramen place up in New York or whatever, and they're like, ooh, your ramen is really good. I'm like, yeah, you want the packet? I didn't even open it.
Yep, that's great.
Yeah.
You can do all kinds of fun stuff with a little imagination.
Yeah.
Bring us a little bit of fresh, a little bit of dehydrated. Perfect.
Yep. Derek, this was a great interview, and we had a really awesome experience.
Oh, good. I hope that I stayed on topic.
Oh, no, it was great. Everything was great.
Yeah. Yeah, we're very grateful that you gave us the time. Thank you very much for talking with us and giving a piece of yourself to our listeners.
For sure.
Mark, it's going to be a cold winter.
Yes, it always is going to be a cold winter. But although I don't know if it can be worse than this past winter that we had.
Yeah, last winter it was terrible. Our garage floor actually heaved from the frost. I'd never seen that before in Buffalo. It was awful.
Well, it was between that. There was a lot of ceilings coming down and a lot of repairs going on out there all year. Still recovering from the winter, and here we are in the middle of December again.
Yeah. Well, remember we did the Boy Scout camp out and it was 12 degrees. I was the only one with the cojones to go and sleep outside.
Yes. Well, I was only out there for the day for that one. I think there was a Bills game the next day.
You don't want to lose your sleep for that.
No. Well, I'm there at 7 a.m. It's a full day working there. So.
Oh, right. Of course. Well, one of the things that I've seen as a common tip or trick, and this is actually something I did when I was on the on that particular camp out, is using a hot water bottle to stay warm. Have you heard of that before?
Yeah. A lot of times people use the Nalgene bottles and put some warm water in there and put it down in your sleeping bag, and it radiates the heat and helps keep your body warm.
Yep. I actually did that in that particular camp out. So the Nalgene's great because it doesn't deform. I've heard a lot of people will try like their Gatorade bottles and it ends up changing shape, and you don't really want to change the shape of your bottle because you risk having the seal fail.
Yeah.
In the middle of a very cold night, which would be awful.
Yeah, I'm sure once that water would leak out, I'm sure it would get cold pretty quick.
Yeah, it'd be a huge disaster. So the Nalgenes are nice. I definitely will bring a Nalgene in the winter, where in the summer I'll only bring, what are they called? The smart water bottles, which are a nice shape for the backpack. So
yep.
I do the Nalgene bottle. I filled it up with close to boiling water, but not boiling water.
Right.
Put it in a sock and then tucked it in my sleeping bag actually before getting in. So this is old school.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Well, that'll help get the temperature of the sleeping bag up closer to your body heat. You know, at least so it's not as big of a shock to your body when you get in there.
Yeah, it was definitely cozy. And to be honest with you, it worked exactly as advertised. I got in and I wanted to get warmed up quick because it was chilly. I put it up against the, you know, where the femoral artery is.
Yep.
It was amazing. It was so warm. I actually had to open up the top of my bag. I was using it as a top quilt and I had to vent a little sweat. I was hot.
Oh, and it's that cold out outside and you're in under the tarp in your hammock. That's sometimes a good problem to have.
Yeah, absolutely.
At least so you know you don't get sweaty and all, because then you're sort of defeating the purpose of everything.
Yeah. Well, it's all right. It's all about managing moisture.
Right.
So yeah, any of the folks out there who are thinking about going out camping, taking their hammocks, I know, especially, you know, you see people starting to do posts on Facebook and do posts about how to, you know, they're not sure how to stay warm. And I know the first few times I went out, I was a little underprepared in terms of having enough to keep warm. And 3 or 4 in the morning, sometimes you can wake up pretty cold.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Especially when you're just sitting, you know, you're basically in one position or you're in one spot for hours. It's not like you're hiking from point A to point B or keeping busy setting up your campsite where, you know, mate, you might not notice it as much. And plus the temperature is dropping a lot over all night.
Yeah, so that water bottle works. Were there any other tricks that you guys used when you were in scouts to keep warm or to get warmed back up in the middle of the night?
Not too much. We were just, you know, back at that, when we were doing the campouts, we had more, you know, it was just the big bulky equipment. We were in our sleeping bags and you just had a pad and you bundled up and layered. And we never really had any bad winters. You know, I was on Long Island and out of all the years I was scouting on the polar bear camp out, that's, you know, where it gets below freezing.
Mm-hmm.
I think we only made it below freezing once.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, and that was So we didn't really have, we didn't really worry about it too much.
Okay. Well, I know up here in cold Buffalo, definitely they talk about the hot water bottle is a great trick that stays warm all night. One secret to that is make sure to put it in like a wool sock or to wrap it in something. That bottle, the outside of the bottle can get pretty warm and you don't want to burn or scald yourself.
Right.
Another little trick I've heard is have some protein or something to eat in the middle of the night, like a Snickers bar. Yep. Digestion is actually fuel. So, you know, it generates some body heat. That's always useful. Have you ever gotten up in the middle of the night and just done some sit-ups or push-ups or something, get the body warming?
No. I usually can make it through the night.
Yeah.
But I know another thing also, say watering a tree before you, relieving yourself before you go to bed.
Oh, that's, yeah.
All that extra liquid in your body that your body's, you know, fighting to keep it under temperature.
Yeah, that's actually one little thing I learned too. I found if I'm going to the bathroom a lot at night,
mm-hmm.
watering the tree a lot, so to speak, it's probably because I'm too cold. Right. There's this thing called vasodilation. I've probably complained about that to you before.
Mm-hmm.
But the kidneys do something kind of weird where to keep you warm, they'll actually pull some water out of your blood. Vasodilation, they dilate the blood. I don't know the exact science. So if somebody wanted to post something to our Facebook page or post something to our website, I'll repost it or mention it on our next podcast. But your body does something where it actually takes some of the moisture out of your bloodstream to try to change the blood pressure. And that supposedly is to try to warm your body up. I think it's something to do with warming up the extremities or cooling off the extremities.
Okay.
So little hint, if you're woozy and you're getting up two or three times at night, bundle up a little bit more, throw on more clothes or put a hat on or even put your jacket back on, get back into that sleeping bag and get warmed up.
Yep. A hat's a big thing too.
Oh yeah. Any exposed body part. Also, if I'm not wearing my jacket, I'll usually zip my jacket up over my feet, over the foot end of my hammock.
Yep.
And that keeps my feet a little warmer. It gives you a little more insulation down there.
Yeah.
So, hey, have you ever heard of Syntax 77?
Why, yes, I have.
Have you really?
Yes. Yeah. I don't know if it was one of those. He was watching on the YouTube videos and he just, I don't know. To be honest, I don't know how I came across him.
Hmm.
And I picked him up and I really enjoy his videos. I watch basically every time one comes out.
Okay.
Whether it's his trip reviews or his gear reviews. That's informative and I enjoy him a lot.
Yeah, another camping nerd.
Yep. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, interestingly enough, I had never heard of him until my son, Christopher, suggested that he might be a good podcast interview.
So definitely.
Yeah, so for next month, we're actually going to be talking to Syntax 77.
Sounds good.
Really looking forward to it. He seems like a really interesting guy. I know he does a lot of solo hiking. He does a lot of gear reviews.
Yes.
So definitely a nerd, kind of. Nerd outdoorsman.
Yep. Oh, that's nothing wrong with that.
No, there isn't.
Well, that's the show. As always, you can find us at www.hyohpodcast.com or on our Facebook page at HYOH Podcast. If you like what you hear, please give us a positive review on iTunes.
Absolutely. If you want to comment or have a question, please visit our Facebook page, or you can send me an email at jonathan@hyohpodcast.com.
And me at mark@hyohpodcast.com. A big thanks to those who are making great suggestions for topics and interviews. This one was suggested by Kurt Popke, Terry Schemmel, and JMB Devotee.
All right. And of course, special thanks to Skid Von Ark for allowing us to use his music for our intro and our outro. And to ITX for hosting our podcast and giving us an awesome design. Thanks, everyone, for hanging around.
I spent a long, long time laying on the ground. Yeah, the tent in my pack's only weighed some pounds. I opened my eyes, and what did I see? A man from Minnesota swinging tree to tree. A thin piece of fabric suspended in the air. Should I even try it?
Man, should you even dare?
Had two straps and a couple of toggles. How this would even work, my mind began to boggle.